right. Well, thanks for sticking around. We're going to jump right into Q&A. Great Sunday morning. I really thoroughly enjoyed it.
Love the prodigal son.
Good, as one of them. Trust me, I'm often referred to as the prodigal son in my family for years and years, and it's true. I love it. It's one of the best. I think it just does the whole story so well, like the Bible
narrative. Encapsulates it.
Yeah.
Shout out to Pat Davies. Just praying for Pat. Just want to let you know we love you, Pat.
Mm-hmm.
Praying for you. Pat has a special place in my heart because her mom used to work with my grandma in the Sundale sewing shop that my grandma had.
Oh.
I have the sign up in the attic.
Oh, yeah?
I'll have to show it to you. Anyway, and Pat remembers playing with my mom when they were little girls.
Oh.
Underneath the light fixture that you sit under over there. That was in Grandpa Ray's living room.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway, small world.
It is a small world. That's awesome.
Get better.
Cool. Well, I'm gonna throw the number on the screen right away here. If you have any questions at all about today's service sermon specifically, but anything at all, text them to us at 360-447-8474. And
thanks to all who handed out food again.
No
yesterday
kidding.
Went really well. It's just becoming a machine.
Which is the coolest thing. It is so helpful for the community. And I'm so impressed at those food boxes that we're getting. Those were awesome.
Yeah, really cool.
And thanks to Nick for, headed that thing up. And
things seem to be going fairly smoothly with the whole Supreme Court nomination, and I think it's due to my prayer last Sunday.
Is that how that worked? You did that? Good job.
So let's throw another little prayer on that whole situation.
Sure,
Lord,
amen.
We just pray for the whole situation. Your will to be done, God. That's what we're looking for. Your will to be done in this, what do you call it? This situation, the circumstance.
Opportunity.
And, yeah, for this Christian woman to be added to the Supreme Court. Amen.
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 Yeah, let's just saturate all of our leadership with God. That would probably help things out. Okay, we got a few questions. So yeah, do text those in and I'll ask them to this guy as we get going. Sounds like everything. Hey, you know what? We're not having any technical difficulties. Let's be thankful for that blessing
today. Oh, boy. Well, get ready. You had to say it.
I know. No, it's just I'm appreciative. I love it. Thanks, Lord, for that.
The new equipment is... We've adjusted to it.
I'm going to add new stuff, though. We're going to keep adding stuff until it fails again, so we'll get there. Okay. Here's a question, which I love. Squandering, suffering, repentance. Isn't it possible for one person at one time to be in all three of these stages in different areas of their life?
Yes.
Right?
I think as we grow and mature, it's almost like passing the baton. You overcome one thing and you're still got your foot hanging in another, and it's growth, it's maturity. When I said we just seem to be determined to learn through pain, we don't have to.
Yes.
But there's a thing about, those natural consequences. We learn by experience. That's when it becomes this conviction. But we could simply trust the word of God and the experience of others.
What a novel idea.
And I think we do that in a lot of things.
Yeah.
I don't have to put a fork in the outlet to see if it'll do to me what I've heard it does to others.
Right.
But when it comes to, the personal, the sins of morality and that kind of stuff, we just seem determined.
Yeah.
I'll bet that it'll be different for me than it has been for literally every other human since the beginning.
Why do you suppose that is? Why do you suppose it's those that are the... just the desire to... Maybe I am God in this instance. Maybe I do know. But yeah, I think that's very true.
So yes, good point. We can easily be in... We can be celebrating having overcome one thing while we're in the midst of learning our hard lesson in another.
Right.
While still looking down the road at something else going, I think I could get away with that.
Hey, well, on the heels of that, here's a question. Why are there some lessons God can't teach without pain? Couldn't he always change our mind without allowing hurt?
Yes, God can teach every lesson without pain. We're the ones. That's why I said we seem to be determined to... And the other, through pain, and the other little statement I put up, which was, what was it? I just had it. Now it's gone. We seem to be determined. Why can't God? I lost it. But there was another statement in there about that.
Can he change our mind without allowing hurt?
He absolutely can.
I guess the question would be, why didn't he design it? This is the classic problem of pain, suffering question, is why then create something? If he's God and he has the ability to create a situation where he can teach us all these things that us kids need to learn without letting us hurt ourselves.
Because there's a threshold. There's a difference between having children and having robots.
Right.
And pre-programmed beings. They can't love you like children can. But children come with a whole set of issues that robots don't if they're perfectly created. So there's this threshold of he can do so much up until this threshold, because past that, he's making robots. And he wants free-willed children who choose to love. And so that's why he allows us to have children, because we could all just be, split into another adult. It could have been made that way. But he says, no, we're going to make up this whole having children and raising them thing so you can understand what's going on. And so with your children, there are just some things that they seem to be determined. You're warning them. You're trying, I want to save you from all this pain. But they seem to be determined. I'm going to, I know what the other one was. We want to trade an easy life for a hard lesson. You want an easy life, just trust the word of God and the experiences of others.
Yeah.
And just take it directly into a conviction. Talk about an easy life.
Right.
And we do that with certain things. We just have those things we're bound and determined to learn through pain. And it's different for every person. You'll have situations that you wrestle with that I don't, and then I do that you don't, just because of wiring and temperament and the place we grew up and the associates we hung around with. And so, to answer the question thoroughly, put a fine point on it, God would love to teach us every lesson without the pain. He's designed it so that we can learn any lesson without the pain. But he can't force us to, or it steps over the threshold and we become robots and not children. So he has to graciously allow us room to rebel, knowing what's going to happen, but just waiting to restore.
Right.
And it is exactly what we do with our own children. It's like we put those protective barriers, but within those, we give them room to get hurt. We give them room to make decisions that...
Maybe there's something to be said, too, for the notion of what that pain is. You know, like that, for the joy that was set before him, even the cross.
Mm-hmm.
And we go, that's pain. That's terrible. And you go, once you see it, like once you have just, you take off your dull human eyes, you can see the whole thing and you go, it wasn't even really pain. Those things were just part of a process that was good that you don't even, how hindsight...
I wouldn't say it wasn't pain. Would say it was worth it, because I was going to bring up the example of giving birth.
Right. Okay.
Ladies, like it's been often said, if it were the men who had to give birth, they'd be no babies.
right.
Because we're wimps.
Right. I mean that it's temporal pain. It's a thing that in the eternal context probably...
So overshadows it, overwhelms it.
You recontextualize it, and then you kind of, you don't count it as pain anymore because of the positive. But yes, all those things, wonderful.
You count it as pain, but just in a different way.
No, I disagree. What a bunch of sissies. Okay. hey, somebody, I want to thank my church family for the regular phone calls to check in with me and see if I'm okay. I'm in my 60s, and these calls make me feel a connection with the church while we're stuck at home. We love you. Wonderful. I'm so glad to hear that. That is a really cool thing. I want to say thanks to all the people who are making the phone calls in our church and staying
connected.
Yeah,
if you didn't
get
a phone call just recently, like within the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, make sure you get on our list.
Yeah, it means we don't, for whatever reason, we don't have your current phone number, because we are trying to stay in contact with every household that calls his place home.
And they're in the cards in the beginning there. We have some how to contact us stuff. So if you need help in anything or, want to get on that list.
Here, and I'm going to temporarily go out of frame, but I just want to show you all that I can stand up. I was out in public. I was getting some pizza at Mod Pizza, and I saw someone from the church, and they said, it's so nice to see that you can stand and even walk. Because for
That's
months.
True.
All I've seen is you sitting in that chair.
I know. And every time you stand, he usually pulls his mic pack off. It's a whole deal. We tell him to stay seated.
I'm tethered.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, quick correction. Liz Chester is texting us. We have a limited number of the free plastic shoe boxes, but hundreds of the free cardboard ones still.
So. Okay. So limited number of the free plastic ones.
Right.
Tons of the free cardboard ones.
Yes.
And I've heard a couple people say that you can purchase plastic ones from Hobby Lobby.
Oh, perfect. Wonderful. Okay.
So if you can't get a free if we run out, you can't get a free plastic box at the church, you can buy a free plastic box at Hobby Lobby.
That's right. Okay. Bruce, if one of your kids asked you for their inheritance right now, how would you handle it? That's assuming you got an inheritance for them.
No way.
Like
the father in Jesus parable.
If the answer is no, how would you help them let go of a transactional view of your relationship? Sent by Keaton. No, I'm kidding.
I would jump right to the smothering and kisses. And I wouldn't stop till they cried uncle.
How would you handle it?
No one would ever do that. That's why when I said that he puts these surprises in the story at the beginning and the end, we hear these stories enough. We get, it's like we're vaccinated against the impact of these stories. Because that's a crazy way to open a story. Hey, there was this father had these two sons, and the one son came up and said, Dad, you ain't dying fast enough. Give me my portion of your will right now. So the dad said, well, okay, son, here you go.
Yeah.
And so the son got it all together, meaning he turned it into cash and put it in a bag and said, see you later, Dad. Nice knowing you.
Yeah.
And off he went to Vegas. That's how Jesus is. That's the impact it would have had on these people. And so it's not that, oh, I didn't know people did that. It's the outrageousness of a story where that happens. And then to realize that's a picture of our Father in heaven and us, that he does do that. His will, it's kind of a play on words there, because his will for our lives and then this Father's literal will, transactional will. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we do. Hey, Father.
Yeah.
We're going to split up here. And so give me whatever good thing you've given me or going to give me. And I'm just going to take that for granted. And then I'm just going to go squander it while living in a way that does not glorify you.
Yeah. So if you say no, because, yeah, God was brilliant in this. And he went, sure, here, go learn the lesson on your own. So if you say no down here to, like, your children in that way. Yeah, how do you expedite that lesson? I mean, how do you get them to come to the same place as the prodigal without going through all that pain?
I guess you say, why do you want it? I would ask, why are you asking? What do you? And if he said, well, I just, you know what? I'm tired of this little town and living under your thumb. And, you know, I feel like everyone's watching me. You're a pastor and all. I'm just making this up. But, you know, Pete and I had this conversation. And I'm kidding.
Last week.
And, I'm hanging up. Just now. And if you, I just want to go to Vegas and I want to whatever. I want to be a professional gambler. Yeah. And I don't know. I'm trying to make this as close to home as I can.
Yeah.
And maybe I would say, well, of course I'm not going to give you half of the will as though I'm dead. I won't. But if this is something you need to do, of course, I don't know. I probably wouldn't do this either. But what I could do, as far as I might go, if I thought, okay, he needs this lesson, but tell you what, I'll buy you a plane ticket.
Yeah.
And I'll give you $500 spending money. Go learn a lesson.
I don't know. I see you as the guy who'd be like, all right, let's go. And then you're with him. Like, you would just, no, that's not you?
Not if it was that situation where he's trying to get away from me.
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
But I might fund it. If it seemed like a lesson that needed to be learned.
That's sort of what you're doing then. I mean, like, you're mortgaging some of that inheritance.
Okay, because the kid's going to squander everything.
Right.
So it's like, give him less to squander. Get him to the end of that faster.
Right. You could squander this real quick and learn that lesson. Yeah.
Okay.
I've heard that the prodigal...
Was there an if... Wait a minute. Because you said if no, but was there an if yes?
No, it was just.
I think I answered both, didn't I? Okay, never mind.
Yeah. I've heard that the prodigal son represented Gentiles and his brother, the Jews. Any thoughts on that?
No, I don't think so, because the Gentiles didn't leave the Lord and come back. I think the prodigal represented Jews who weren't faithful, specifically the tax collectors, because the only people who were taught in the Jewish community who were taught to add and subtract and write were the Levites for the purpose of running the temple and the synagogues and teaching and collecting taxes. Because the Jews collected, do you know what the tax was they collected? Any guesses?
The famine that the Jews collected?
The Jews collected a tax. What was it?
I don't.
It's in the Bible. Jesus' day. Well, it's through the whole Bible. Money. Set up by Moses.
I missed the beginning of it. I'm
Stump
sorry.
Stump the chump.
No, wait. Okay, reframe it again. What the...
Okay, here we go. In Jesus' day, the Jews collected a tax.
For the temple?
That's right. You got it.
Okay, that's what we're
it's
talking
about. It's the temple tax.
Okay.
And that's when, remember the Jews came and they asked Peter, did your master not pay the temple tax? And he said, and Jesus said, oh, go catch a fish and there'll be a coin in its mouth and we'll use this as an opportunity to show everybody that even the fish are going to pay my way. So the Levites, they were in charge of collecting temple tax. So they were taught to collect taxes. They were taught to add and subtract and figure out taxes. And they were taught to read and write for the purpose of teaching and all that. But it was just the Levites, the tribe of the Levites.
Right.
Now, and Matthew was a tax collector. What was his other name?
Levi.
Levi.
The Levite.
Why would he be named Levi? Why would that be his Jewish name? Because he's a Levite.
Yeah.
And his name was Levi, but it was also Matthew, which most likely was his Gentile name, his Roman name. And so the Romans...
His Jesus nickname, perhaps.
And so the Romans figured out that they could hire Levitical Jews to collect taxes in Judea, and it would go over much better than if the Romans were there in the land doing this. Mm-hmm. And so the only Jews they could get to collect taxes for Caesar were the ne'er-do-wells, which is why the tax collectors were so looked down upon. So when Jesus makes a tax collector, one of the 12, Levi, now he's sitting with tax collectors and harlots, and he's telling this story about the prodigal son, because the dad has two sons, and the prodigal takes his share, takes his money, squanders it all the way, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And then comes back home. And the one who's been with dad and never left doesn't want to, which we'll probably do next. We got to do the second half next week.
The other brother?
Yeah, let's do the, oh, that's a good title. The other brother.
The other brother.
The other brother.
Yes. I know, because he didn't make it. That's one of my favorite parts. That's the punchline for this story.
And so all that to say, I think that it's specifically addressing all the Jewish Levitical tax collectors that followed Jesus, who he would say to the Pharisees and Sadducees, the tax collectors are entering the kingdom before you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he came for the house of Israel. They're part of the house. Zacchaeus, they got mad at him because he went to eat with Zacchaeus. And he says he's a son of Abraham or something. Anyway, so I think it's specifically about those two groups, but then acts as an analogy for anyone and everyone in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Deviant heart, in any way.
And the deviant heart that repents and returns, and then the faithful heart that is a little bitter about, you know, old this kid that had all the fun and just gets forgiven.
It's that, is it better to say that you're going to do something and then not do it, or do something and say that you're not? Have that backwards, whatever the, but you know that thing. It's like it's kind of like that.
The other two sons. Hey, maybe we'll have to do that. Maybe we'll have to do a two son.
I'm the second born son in my family, so
I'm the youngest son. Why is it always the youngest?
I don't know, but boy, oh boy, is it. Okay, how do I know when to rescue my children? When have I waited too long? Because I think that was a great point that you made. You know, as a side note to parents, is to not jump in there and save them too early. Because from experience, I say this to a lot of parents that I talk to. Whenever you're having a kid that's going through something and you feel like they're just lost to it and you're trying to kind of give them that hands-off approach, it's hard. I know how hard that is, but it works. It works. If you've planted those seeds, they come back and they do their work in the heart. How long is too long? Or how do I know when to rescue my children? I think it's based on that intimate relationship that you have. You can tell that point when it's...
when they've learned their lesson.
When your help would help the overall situation. There's a point where... everything that you say, like if you bail them out right now, you know exactly how they're going to behave. They're going to come back and feel entitled and know that you're always there for them. They need to feel the sting that you won't be there. You have to have, you know, you have to have that experience.
Because you're preparing them for the day they won't have you.
Exactly.
It's a loving thing you're doing.
Yeah. So no, obviously like harm, you know, there's physical harm, those sorts of things where if you can prevent that, you pull them out of it. But you allow them to feel the consequence of their actions as much as they can before there's a point of no return. Also, like if, you know, you don't, we never enable something that might get a hold of them, like addiction. I don't say, do your drugs. I say, no, we're going to draw a line here. Right. If there's anything that is going to take them. But if they say, I'm going to move out because I got everything figured out, I go, okay, let's do that. Or we do it like the old...
But yeah, it's very subjective to situation and personality and wiring and all. But I think I liked what you said about you can kind of tell the obvious when it's too soon.
Yeah.
When they haven't internalized any of the pain, you know, because what I was trying to address are what I see, and it's a temptation for all of us as a parent, where something happens to Junior that was half their fault and half someone else's.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get mad at the other person and we want to defend them as though it was none of their fault. That's really what I was talking about, was we want to make sure that we are appropriately looking at, assessing, addressing the fault of our child and making sure that we don't rescue before they feel and understand that they had a part in it and a piece in it. And then usually if there's a way to rescue them by helping them rescue themselves, that's better.
Right.
You know, so
before
rather
something
than us,
beyond...
I'm going to, you know, okay, you had a thing with a kid at school. Okay, before I'm just going to go in and tell that kid's parents, you know, it's why don't you try speaking this way or saying this or doing
that? Yeah. Right. And before it's something that they cannot bear, you know, like that sort of, I won't let you be tempted beyond something that you can bear. It's like if there's something that you know, intimately knowing your child, that this is something that they can't handle without my assistance, that's when you step in. But aside from that, it's all going to be on our own shoulders at some point. So train them up now. Do you think that the famine that is mentioned is referring to literal famine like Joseph experienced in Egypt, or a metaphorical famine referring to his behavior and his heart, or both?
I think it works as an analogy, but it's just simply a story. And in the story, it's a famine. In the story, there's a famine in the whole land, and so no one had anything to eat, and so he went and no one could give him anything, and so he tended pigs because the only benefit to tending the pigs was you got to eat the carob pods.
Yeah.
And so he didn't, you know, and that wasn't enough to live on. That's why he's still starving to death. So in the story...
Unless carob pods represent the, you know...
In the story, it's a real famine, and he's really starving, and he goes home. But
at least.
But what's wonderful is, and you tell me the deeper meanings of this, Dad kills the fattened calf in the middle of the famine.
Yeah.
But it also says in that whole country... Does it mean just that distant country?
Oh, yeah.
It's a story. It's just a story, but, you know, you're trying to take the elements, because there is no detail in there that Jesus doesn't mean to have meaning if it's in there. And so I was looking at those two things, and I didn't come up with something worth including in the sermon.
Well, what you did include in the sermon, though, I was the context that you gave it about Kaphar Naam and Kaphar Carib.
Yeah.
Whatever. What was it called?
It's Kepher, a village. It's the village of Nahum and village of Kareb, which is right across
where the pigs were.
Where Jesus cast the demons into the pigs, and that is the land of the Gentiles, right? Across the Sea of Galilee. So distant country can easily mean outside of the Holy Lands.
Yeah.
You know, and so that distant country, 8 miles across the Sea of Galilee, is where Jesus went and cast the big old herd of swine that live under the carob trees. Everyone had heard that story before he starts telling this. And so I think this just contains all these elements.
The crazy naked guy who's living in the...
Yeah, and he sent him home. Yeah. Go home. Remember the guy wanted to jump in the boat and go with him? And Jesus says, no, you go home and tell everyone.
Well, so how connected do you think those things are? Do you think that those are just because they're in the mind, or do you think we should really synthesize those stories? Or just
I think we should know what's going on. Of course, the harmonized gospels really help in this.
Yeah, yeah.
Know what's happening, because it just so enriches. So to know that, oh yeah, and he just did this, and now he's telling this, and they've heard about that, and it's, I don't know that there is or isn't these deeper truths that are hiding in, you know, all those connections.
Right.
I'm not suggesting that. All I'm saying is, it's so cool when you really start to absorb the stories. I'm always preaching this, the stories, because the stories start connecting themselves in ways you could never have imagined. Like Jesus sends that guy out, right? The naked screams every night, cuts himself. Remember all that? Anyway, he cleanses himself. You know, a couple things. One, he's naked, but when the village comes out, he's clothed, sitting at Jesus' feet. Where'd those clothes come from? I'm guessing someone else is mostly naked, and his name is Jesus, because he gives the clothes off his back. Okay, then he sends the guy out. Well, he sends the 72 out, and he commissions them, along with the 12, he commissions them to cast out demons, because you can't just do that. You have to be commissioned. But then later, the disciples come back, and they say, hey, we saw somebody casting out demons that's not one of us. So we told him to stop, but he wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who would that be? Not one of them, but has to be commissioned. This old naked non-Jew that Jesus sent out, commissioned.
Apostle.
Who, if you talk about anyone who knows how to cast out demons, that had a legion cast out of him. I think we see that guy pop up again. And so those things just start appearing. It's like, well, wait, now once you know the stories, it's like, well, that can only, I think that can only be one guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to be commissioned, and there was a guy commissioned, and anyway.
Yeah. Ooh, good stuff. That's fun. Okay. I think we got a little lull here, so I'll put in a last call. Once again, text them in, get them in under the wire. You said you're thinking next week now. Are you going to
go
in
that
direction?
We got this great title, The Other Brother.
The Other Brother? That's right. That's how it works. You just start with the title and you go through.
Sometimes.
Reverse engineer. Yeah, because you've preached on The Other Brother before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've preached on The Prodigal and The Other Brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
This time, something that was brand new. I love re-preaching, because I pull those old sermons out and go through them. And they now, I spend the same amount of time putting them together, but now that I have the basics down, like I can go down all these rabbit trails I wanted to and didn't have time for.
Right.
And one of the things, there are several things new this time, but one that really was a fun find for me and realization was the whole, the reason he works in the fields with the pigs is that's his only marketable skill. And so the very thing that he was escaping is what saves his life.
Right.
How ironic. I'd never seen that before
in
the story.
That's good.
So,
well, I can't wait to find the new stuff that you find about The Other Brother. There was a question, I think, that somewhat addressed it, The Other Brother, too. So do you want to hang on to that till next
week?
What's
the question?
Let me see if I can find it again.
We'll see
if we
can weave it in.
Oh, is it better to have been the other brother? Like, is it better to have gone out and experience all of this disobedience and correction and pain, or to stay at home and be unsettled? What's the, you know, unhappy, you know, wrong mindset staying at home, you know, or right mindset after going away?
Let's say there's two children in your house, roughly the same age.
Mm-hmm.
one, small children, one touches the hot stove and burns his hand.
Right.
Okay. The other one doesn't touch the hot stove and burn his hand, but he sees that you took this kid to the doctor and he got a couple presents and stuff and everyone felt sorry for him. And he's like, why does he get all this attention just for doing the dumb thing? Where's my presents? No. Okay, what was better? Which one? You pick. You want to be the kid that touched the hot stove and got a couple presents afterwards?
Yeah,
or do you want to be...
I do.
Actually, this would be a great question. Or do you want to be the kid that didn't touch the hot stove but is jealous that this kid's getting attention? Which one? Raise your hand. Who chooses, especially if there's other people in the room, okay? Raise your hand. Who wants to be the one that touched the hot stove and got all the attention and the presents? Wow. Okay. Who wants to be the kid that didn't touch the hot stove, but is a little miffed that he didn't get presents because he didn't do anything dumb?
Well, it's a tie here.
Yeah. Just so you know, that was Ken and Noah chose the wrong one. And then Shar and I are still alike. We chose the same one.
Yeah, that's a fascinating. We'll address that in the sermon. So that's a great... funny.
And now that gives you all something to discuss. If you raised your hands, if you didn't, and you're with people, you need to do that so that you can discuss.
This is one of those things, too, because to me, I would imagine that the vast majority is on my side. So it's funny. No, I'm just saying, I bet, and see, based on that reaction, I'm assuming you think the vast majority would be on your side.
Who wants to touch a hot stove?
I do. So much attention. I get to burn it. Everyone says, are you okay? And then they take me and I get the doctor's trip. And, I'm special that way. I don't know. It's a thing. And I come away with the knowledge, the empirical, experiential knowledge. I know it. And then my brother who's never done it, I'd be like, oh, you wouldn't know. You don't get it. You have no idea. Oh, those ones who touched them.
You'd hold it over me.
Oh, we're so, what do you know about anything? And so that's funny. So I'm curious because we should put up a poll because I think that it would be so far in my favor. And I bet that's what both sides think.
Okay, how can we put up a poll? How can you have them, go in
Facebook? You can do a poll on Facebook, right? I'm getting the nod. Yeah, let's put one on Facebook. We'll put it up after this.
Okay, and then you go on Facebook and you let us know.
Cool. That'll be fun. Remember, and I told you so is on the line. Whichever one of us gets more votes. That's pretty big around here, so. All right, I think we'll end
it there. That's a great way to end.
Yeah, wonderful. So thanks to everybody for everything. We got so much cool stuff going on. Thanks for texting in. Thanks for showing up around the church. Thanks for helping out and all the cool stuff that we got going on. So
love y'all.
Love you. Miss you. We'll see you soon.
James. Join us again next week.
Join us again next week. Y'all come back now, you hear? Until then, we'll see ya.
Bye.